All right, everyone. Why don't we go on ahead and get started? I'm Joe Morello, and I'd like to call to order our meeting of the Health, Safety, and Emergency Preparedness Committee here at Skyline College. Welcome, everyone. Our first order of business is approval of the agenda. Do we want to change the agenda at all? Anything there? Lori, or Jessica, I'm sorry. I was looking at Lori, and I saw Jessica raise her hand. Jessica, go on ahead. You're muted.
Yes, for item number four, AFT would like to motion to table our proposal for representation at the District Safety Committee for until our May 5th meeting. Okay. We'd like to table that agenda.
So what that'll mean, if we approve the agenda, that item will be held over and we'll act on it at the May 5th meeting. And you should have had the item is in the packet, it's in the agenda, it's listed on the site, so you can go on ahead and review that. So can I have a motion and a second to approve the agenda, taking item four off and holding it over to our next meeting? Please.
Jim Vangeli, I'll make a motion.
Thanks, Jim.
I'll second it, Lori.
Second by Lori. Why don't we do it this way? Because I don't think it's controversial. If anyone's opposed, use your raise hand function. Seeing none, are there any abstentions? Use your raise hand function. Passes unanimously. So let's do this. I want to share for a second. So just for us, as we start the meeting, I want to go through our gathering space norms. Our college governance adopted these in November. And just to remind us all that this is a space where people should feel free to speak, that we respect each other's opinions. And while we may not always agree with each other's opinions, that we allow folks the space in the room to offer their opinion. There are no bad ideas. We don't make judgments on what people are saying in this space, and that we're here to help each other and work with each other. This is the Health and Safety Committee. It's a very important committee on this campus, and that we work together to make it as helpful and safe a campus as possible. So I just wanted to share those again with everyone. And those are also in the meeting notes. Next up is our consent agenda. We did have a couple of changes to the minutes that we sent out. So before we take a motion and a second on this, I want to read those. Under item number one, call for order for voting members in attendance included, the last four names in that paragraph are not voting members, but resources. And then under 5B, committee membership in charge, the fourth bullet point down, I'm gonna read the sentence and say what we're adding in. Another person thought that the rationale behind the committee members was varied in that some members represent a constituent group that is served by the committee, while others are professionals who oversee health and safety related functions that serve the campus. So we would add in that additional language to clarify the statement. So those would be the changes to the minutes. Given those changes, would anyone like to make a motion to approve the minutes in a second?
Do we need to call for any other changes or we're good?
Oh yeah, I should have said that, I'm sorry. All right. Did anyone else have any suggested changes? Thank you.
I motion to approve the minutes.
Great, can I have a motion by Jessica? Can I have a second, please?
I second it, Lori.
Lori slipped in with a second. Any discussion on it? Again, I don't think this is controversial, so I'm gonna go, if anyone is opposed, please use your raise the hand function. Don't see anyone raising their hand. If anyone would like to abstain, please use the raise the hand function. And I see no abstentions, so that passes unanimously. Standing reports, Donna told me she did not have a report for the health center, so we'll go past that. I do not see John Doctor on this call. So we're gonna hold over on facilities, and that means we will go to Jim Vangeli and public safety.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. Everything's been going smooth regarding tests and PPE distribution. We've been getting them out to everyone who's requested. And as of right now, until further notice, you should have easy access to pick up any PPE or testing kits that you need from either public safety or the bookstore. Those two areas are being kept supplied around the clock. So if you need something, go to either one of those places. You can also call public safety and we'd be happy to bring something to you. So we will deliver as well. We're full service and we want to help everybody as best we can. Other than that, does anyone have any questions or concerns for anything related to public safety?
Any questions for Jim? Not seeing any. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Appreciate you and the public safety staff.
Thank you.
Emergency preparedness. So today, Vince is sitting in for Ben Zara. So Vince, and yep. This is great. John Doctor's just joining, so we might go back to John after we finish with Vince. So Vince, why don't you introduce yourself to just so everyone understands your role, and then go on ahead with your report.
Thank you, Joe. My name is Vince Garcia. I'm the emergency management coordinator for the district. I work underneath Ben Zara, who's our emergency manager. And today I'm going to be filling in for him. We have a very brief update, no PowerPoints. It's not going to be a long time. Right now, we just completed our building captain handbook, which is a comprehensive document. It covers the program, the roles, responsibilities, our training requirements, and some more that's in there. We'll be meeting with the marketing teams to discuss our new building captain apparel, so the t-shirt designs and moving forward on those. We're waiting to hear back from the board on some building captain changes that we made to see how we're going to proceed. And our last one is that we do have a CPR training coming to Skyline on Flex Day, which is the 21st from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. So if you can join that, I know it's all day, but it would be a good refresher course for you or your first time in to get CPR certified. That's everything I have for you guys. Thank you, Joe.
And just to piggyback on Vince, when the registration comes out for Flex Day, you'll do it through that registration to sign up for the class. It'll be running through the CTTL. So please make sure that you look for that announcement when it comes on out. Okay. Are there any questions for Vince? Nope. Hearing none, then we're going to take a step back. Welcome, John. John Doctor. John, could you give us an update for facilities, please?
Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. College Ridge faculty housing is on schedule and should be completed midsummer by June. Building 2 is still at DSA for the state architects to approve that project. We're hoping that the approval is at the end of this month. Building 19, we're installing new outside lighting to the outside perimeter of 19 so that the building has a better improved lighting for the outside. And building 1 project is on schedule. And we're meeting with the Dean, Dean Porter's team at the end of this month. So we're continuing to meet with faculty and staff in building 1. And that's it for, I do have one. We moved the COVID testing back to Lot P. You'll see a small kiosk where the staff for COVID care is in Lot P to do the COVID testing.
And if you don't know where Lot P is at, that is the one that is right off the loop road that's out where the lower soccer field and track is located. It's the lot that's right there at the corner. Are there any questions for John? Seeing none. Ray Hernandez, COVID-19.
I had one that I put into the chat.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Alice, always feel free to, I never look at the chat. I hate to say it. I don't look at the chat because I try and focus on the meeting. So go on ahead.
I'm sorry. I should have put my hand up.
Yeah.
John, I put this in the chat. I've been asking facilities for the last year and a half or so. Chairs were removed from my classroom because of distance, social distancing. And that's perfectly fine. But when I asked to have them returned when my class returned into full class, they were unable to find them. Do you know how we can locate those, please?
I will personally look into this. What classroom?
7205.
7205. I will personally look into this and get back to you as soon as I can, okay?
Thank you, John. I've asked for this twice, and it seems it's... They keep telling me they're disappeared.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Lucia.
I'm not sure if this is appropriate for this particular meeting, but John, are you in charge of signage?
Sort of, but yeah. I will take your question on signage.
I have students who don't know where the counseling department is, and there's supposed to be signs. And I was just hoping maybe there are signs, but I think there needs to be more signage.
Okay.
And going over to counseling is pretty empty, they say, because people have a hard time finding it. So I just think a little bit more signs would help.
Okay. Would that be building 1 or 19?
The brick building, what used to be Pack Heights.
Okay. Are you looking at interior, exterior, or both?
Exterior ones, the whatever they're called, sandwich boards.
Yeah. Okay. Will do. I'll look into that.
And John, what I'll do is I'll when we finish this, I'll email Sherry.
Okay.
Because I think they had signs for that, but okay. So I'll make a note of that, and I'll CC you as well. Yes, Alice.
I see the signs because I do a walk around the campus every day, and I have seen the sandwich signs, but I have to be honest with you, I don't see what they say until I'm right on top of them. If somebody is actually looking for counseling, most of the time they're looking up, and the sandwich boards are down below your waist. So I would suggest putting a sign that's a little higher up. It doesn't have to be a permanent sign, but you could put it up on a stand of some kind so that catches people's eye and let them know where they are.
Okay. We'll look into that.
And John, like I said, I'll send Sherry when we finish with this a note.
Yep.
Okay. Great. Anything else for John? Perfect. Ray, COVID-19.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Paul, can you give me a share screen, right? So good to see everybody. Happy April, happy Thursday, and happy downswing to the semester. And I know that, you know, at our beginning of the semester, we had returned to campus. We were in the midst of a surge. And so now, you know, we're halfway through, you know, and things are seeming to run smoothly. What I want to share with you are just three things today. First, just want to give you again some resources to what is happening on the landscape with COVID. And so, you know, I've always shared with you the data dashboard, and I'll put these in the URL, the chat for you. Make sure I get everybody. And so I know that this is small to see, but just want to put your attention just to the trend line down here in terms of the cases that the county is seeing. And again, just as a reminder, we know that many, many more people are doing home tests, which are not reported. However, given that, the trend line still is pretty accurate if you're just looking at the trend of what's going on. And so we know that the Omicron subvariant is is out and about, and there's a lot of discussion and there's monitoring going on. And particularly one of the proactive measures is looking at wastewater. And so we do know that it is amongst us. And with that, you know, we're certainly paying attention from the district level in terms of reports for positives. And at least the week after spring break, anecdotally, I haven't seen any increase at this point in time. If we also look at the CDC's website, and I was not here for our last meeting, but I did give a report and did share with you all the metrics for how things are being monitored. Just want to remind us that we're looking at three metrics now in terms of looking at the community level. We're looking at the case rates, and our case rates are about 65 per 100,000, which have been maintaining stability still to this point. And then added to that, even as we're looking, okay, well, regardless of what the case rates are, what are we looking at in terms of severity of disease? And right now we're looking at a very low percentage or very low number per 100,000 here in the county for admissions. And then the percentage is very, very low. And so I gave you the URL there, but I'd have you look at how are COVID-19 community levels calculated. And so we give a low, medium, and high, and gives you the ranges for each of these monitoring data points. And so just to let you know, we're extremely low in that. And as we're, again, looking at the endemic phase, that's really a key portion because COVID is not going away. It will continue to stay with us. And as a district, we've done an extremely thorough job at continuing with strategies. Of course, we still have the mask mandate, and that still is in place until further notice. We're looking at reporting, and that reporting has really helped keep people who have tested positive or are symptomatic off campus. And so make sure to remind your colleagues, remind students that reporting is still an important structure. I have not heard from the county yet about any changes to the reporting structure, but I do know that they're shifting their resources away from tracing. We have not received word yet that tracing will no longer be required, but we'll keep certainly the district posted as that moves forward. The other piece that I want to relate to you are vaccines and vaccination boosters. The district is taking, moving forward, a campaign to encourage people to get their boosters. We do mandate primary vaccinations. We do not mandate boosters, and there is no plan right now to mandate boosters, as CDC has not changed their definition, and it doesn't look like they are going to. We're seeing other large organizations such as Google and Apple. They've had their employees return to campus, and they are requiring the primary vaccinations, but not boosters. So I just want to give you that umbrella of where things are moving in our area. However, having said that, the district understands that the primary strategy is vaccinations, and so our encouragement will continue, and we're going to be working on a campaign. We do know that everybody's eligible for boosters at this point in time for a first booster, and now people who are at moderate to high risk or who are over 50 are eligible for a second booster, regardless of what they've received in their primary and first boosters, as long as 4 months have passed. And so we're going to be messaging starting next week, along with, we still have our vaccination pop-up clinics, and the next one is happening April 26th. So please remind your colleagues, please remind your students that this is coming up, and if they have not received their first booster, or if they're eligible for their second booster, we have, of course, our vaccination clinic at College of San Mateo, or they can go to their local pharmacy to get those. Okay. And so those are all the pieces that I have to share with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray. Do we have questions for Ray, please? Musa, go on ahead.
Hi, Ray. Actually, I just heard on the news that the European Union is saying that the second booster is useless for people below under the age of 80. Do you have any idea about what the U.S. is thinking, or CDC in general, for the second booster?
No, I think the only thing I've heard, and again, you know, there are just lots of conversations taking place, but I think really the only thing I've heard is the United States is being cautious. So really, they have been waiting to hear what other countries are doing, what the data is showing. And certainly right now, they're being cautious for 50 years and older and not recommending or allowing for people under 50 at this time for a second booster. So I would just say they're going to watch the data based on what's happening worldwide. One of the things that I have been asked to do is our study abroad programs are relaunching. And so I did some pre-visits with administrators and faculty who are going to be teaching. And the three countries we just went to were London, Spain, and Portugal. And as we know, for those of you who keep an eye, the UK, they rescinded everything. And one of the things that they've seen is they've seen an uptick, of course, with this sub-variant. So they're now going back to see what they're going to do. But I do know both Spain and Portugal on April 15th are going to completely rescind their mask mandates and rescind some of their other things. So just to say, even worldwide, the movement is going. But again, I think we're going to learn some things. And I think that the United States is going to benefit from that as they're watching what's happening in the EU. Thanks for that question, Lisa.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ray? I think the one thing I've learned is you can't predict COVID. So we'll see what happens with everything. We'll have to be flexible in how we meet the challenges ahead. Thanks, Ray. Okay, so now to number four. In case you joined late, we held over and we'll vote at the next meeting on the recommendation for faculty and staff representation at the District Safety Committee. So then roundtable, anything that someone wants to throw on the table. And then after that, we're going to go through the draft of the bylaws. So, but roundtable, is there anything that someone would like to bring up? Oh, Jessica, yeah.
I just wondered if, I think it was Vince, if he might be able to repeat the information for those of us who came late. If you can't attend a CPR training on Flex Day, which is most of the day, that do you mind just saying a couple words about?
Yeah, absolutely. Training? So if we do have a Flex Day training, it's your CPR training on the 21st, going to be from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. If you can't make that, you can always join the Building Captain Training Program, which is a three-day course. And day two of that is your CPR, first aid, and AED. Those training dates haven't been established yet. They will come out. And once they do, please, they'll go to each campus and they'll trickle their way down. You can enroll in them. And that's another way where everybody can get their CPR training.
So we don't need to be a building captain.
To have your CPR training?
Right.
You don't need to be a building captain, but you will get your building captain and CPR training in that program.
Thank you.
I hope I made that clear. Yeah.
I guess I just have a quick follow-up. There's no way we can do it that's not building captain 3 days commitment.
So right now, I'm sorry, yeah, we are working on it. We're working on having one CPR class and additional training at each campus every year. It's something we're working with the board on and in each campus individually. So we're moving forward through that.
And Vince, maybe to walk the group through why it's 7 hours, because the 7 hours, I think, is the big time frame. Yeah. So why is it seven hours?
A standard CPR class is an 8-hour day, and that's what you get. We're going to bring you through your adult CPR, your pediatric, and your infants. The use of AEDs, the use of BVM, which is a bag valve mask where you place it on somebody's face and you can use it on the side. Also some your first aid and different things like that. So it's in a day. We try to keep it short. We try to keep it light. but you will be getting your hands on, you'll be seeing everything. At the end of the day, you will be AHA certified in your CPR.
Musa.
So Vince, this is also necessary for the people who had their certification 2 years before or yes. older. Is that correct?
Recertification?
Because, yeah.
This can be a recertification or your first certification for CPR training. But yes, your certs are only good for 2 years.
2 years, okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I think what Musa was trying to ask, Vince, is it's not separate if it's a recert versus someone who's new. You do the full training, whether you're being recertified or it's the very first time, correct?
That's correct. Yes. They are perishable skills. We bring you through the exact same training both times.
And it's good. I mean, I'll throw this in. And then, Jessica, I see your hand up. I it's good to... I've done it lots of times and you always, and the guidance changes always too. I mean, it moves a lot over time. So it's always good to do it. Go on ahead, Jessica.
Sure. I just wanted to ask, does the training include learning how to use the defibrillators?
Yes. Yeah, so an AED is an automatic external defibrillator. So we bring those on and you put the pads correctly on the chest. We have mannequins that light up when you have the correct CPR and the depth and the speed on the side. Your AED trainers walk you through it. They'll bring you through each step, open them up, press on, follow the instructions and the prompts, place the pads. It will tell you to continue to do CPR while it's analyzing a rhythm. It will tell you to stop doing CPR while it analyzes. It'll tell you then to deliver a shock or continue CPR, which is identical to how the AEDs on each campus that we have operate. So you'd be very familiar and grabbing them, even if it's not the exact same type of AED, the steps are the same.
One other question. In the library on the second floor, we have these evacuation chairs for stairs in an emergency.
Yes.
That I don't know how to use.
Okay. Yeah.
Is Those that your- no. I'm sorry, should I reach out for individual help on that or is that also included?
That's included in the building captain training too. It's your evac chairs, lifts and carries, how to move somebody down the stairs, how many teams, but please reach out to me. Let's get a secondary training or just an individual training for your teams and we can go through that. It shouldn't take us more than an hour for everybody to be comfortable with how they operate and successfully moving and manipulating people downstairs.
Okay,
I would be more than happy. To walk.
I'll be in touch. Thank you.
Outstanding. Thank you.
And Vince, just as a suggestion, you know, if we could ever record, I mean, there's hands on and then there's record because then we can post those things on our website.
Okay.
As resources for folks. The other question I had was on the AED locations, is that something that you track through your office or is that done at the campus? Because I was thinking then that would be a resource then that we would want the people on this committee to have as well. Do you know who keeps that?
I think so. AEDs were a little tricky when they first came out. Individual departments were purchasing them and putting them in places. So I'm trying to write an AED standardization objective or an SOP is what we've been working on. We have the list of all the locations of the AEDs. That's something that public safety and my office also has. I can get that into a form for you and deliver that. I also remember, I think the Disability Resource Center had the list as well. I don't quote me on that. It's something I believe we have, but let me go through. I can get the list and I'll send that over to you of all the locations.
And I'll follow up too. That'll be the second email I send after this meeting. Musa.
Actually, it's related to this point. I remember when we had the captain building training, we got the website that shows you all the AED locations in the school and outside in the county.
Yes.
And it puts you as somebody who's got trained under the obligation of going and help just in case. But you get the signal on your phone and you have all the locations on your phone. So, but I don't recall the website right now, but I know like Vince gave it to us or somebody gave it to us back then.
That's something we'll definitely need to look back into and see the status of it. I haven't looked at it in a while since we got busy with COVID related. So that's, I'm going to get back onto that. But thank you, Musa. I appreciate it though.
Okay. Any other things for roundtable? Any other follow-ups for Vince? Okay, great. Thanks, Vince.
Perfect. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Of course, any more questions, please feel free to email me.
All right, everyone. So committee, let me bring this up. Share. Okay, let's go here. Is this okay? Great. So everyone, if you, and I'm going to share this for a second, but we have the document and go through it. But if you want to catch my attention once I share the document, just use your raise the hand function, and then I'd be more than happy to call on you. So this is a draft. What I tried to do, and let me give you a little bit of background, is we've been talking about it. I've shared the bylaws that we saw from CSM and Kenyatta. Our goal is to try and align with those, but we can have some differences, right, in terms of how we do it and put it together. So, but in listening to the committee, I felt the strong direction was that we wanted to keep the breadth of our committee. In other words, all the different voices, all the different constituencies. CSM's was small. And then Kenyatta's was a little bit larger. And so what we wanted to do was to keep that, because we really see this as being a, and I used the term before, not in a bad way, surveillance committee, a committee that reaches across the entire campus. So what I did was I worked off of what they had adopted and kind of updated it for us. So you'll see I used Kenyatta's, and then I used the red font to just put in our committee. So I put the proposed date as May because I'd like to try and vote on something in May if we could get it done for the end of the year. And then in red, I put in any changes that were different from Kenyatta. So I had Skyline College, obviously, there. The functions were the same, and we're obligated to follow what's in the collective bargaining agreement. So I didn't include that here in the functions, but we certainly could. I got that feedback. But then I added two additional functions, which was discuss, disseminate, and serve as a resource for relevant health, safety, and emergency preparedness information to the campus constituency, and raise levels of awareness about health, safety, and emergency preparedness. The recommends, if it's a campus-specific issue, it would go to our college governance committee. If it applies district-wide, it goes to district safety. And then for membership, what I tried to do was look at how we're currently structured and tried to mimic that. And make sure that we included the broad constituency throughout the campus. So when you see that, there's my role, when you see it's the role, right? So it's public safety cap. So I, like for me, I'm the VPA now. If I leave tomorrow, there'll be another VPA, that person would step into this role, right? Facility manager, I put bookstore or learning center manager. Those are major areas of traffic where people are coming through. Director of community relations, that's Sherry, on our campus. It had Title IX coordinator. That would be our director of student support, dean of counseling. Dean of enrollment services has always been on this committee. Campus discipline officer, dean of KAD. Then on the faculty reps, two appointed by AFT. That's what's in the contract. And then I tried to pick primary instructional areas here. And, you know, so I put BEEP and I put Child Development Center because I know Tina's been on it. But I also know we've had reps from Cosmo on it, but there would be one representative, right, from that area. And then for classified, appointments by CSEA and AFSCME, those are mandated in the contract. Tried to pick the others that are here. So the health center is Donna. You know, that would be an important person to have on here. For STEM, hazmat, that's actually Moose's role because he does the hazardous materials that we store and has to report on those and things like that. And then the student reps. And then ex officio. So someone said, you know, we have the non-represented, and then we also have the VPI, VPSS, and president. So I just said it could be the VPI, the VPSS, the president or their designee, but they would serve as ex officio members. That gives us our total voting members here. And then term limits, it would be 2 years for represented but not an appointed person. So the appointed positions could extend past that. So like the union mandated positions could extend past that, or if it's tied to a function, it could extend past that. But if you're just serving as a rep of a division or something like that, that would rotate every 2 years. The support staff is Paul. Thank goodness for Paul, in terms of helping to run the meetings. And then the non-voting, the resource staff. So we've heard from Vince today, we've heard from Ray. Those would be those types of positions that would be sitting there that would sit in with us. Quorum would be, 50% plus one. Are we a Brown Act committee? No, we're not a legislative committee. So we'd be governed by Robert's rules. And I put our meeting dates as those first, I kept it in terms of what it is. We can change that. And then someone sent to me, CSM has electing the chair, I think, chair selection, here it is. Chair is selected from within the committee. So, I've been the chair. I don't need to be the chair. I don't need to continue being the chair. That can be the first item of business when the committee meets each fall, is to select a chair from within the committee. It does not have to be the BPA. So this was a draft, tried to capture, what I felt where people were at, but we're not wedded to it. So I'm going to stop sharing so I can see everyone. I'm here to listen. So I'm not trying to drive this. I want to make that perfectly clear. here to listen, because what I'd like to do is come up with something that we would feel comfortable with voting at the next meeting and approving. So then we would have that moving forward into next year. So then I could work at soliciting reps, like getting all that rep information. So the reps, if it's, this doesn't apply to the contractual reps, but if you're AFT or CSEA, the faculty, those AFT and CSEA and ASME reps don't need to be approved, but if you're faculty or classified, you would have to be, if you're faculty, approved by Academic Senate, and if you're classified by CSEA. So I wanted to make people aware of that. So that's a step. And I want to thank Jessica for tracking that down for me, that we would need to take once we get the committee all put together. So that's what I got so far. Totally open to feedback and where people are at. Yeah, Lori.
Yeah, thank you. So a couple of questions. One is, like, my division elects their, we vote on our representatives for the various committees. So what one question is, so what would be the grounds of the Academic Senate not approving somebody? And also, I want to say we've made great progress during our year of how to run a meeting. I think a lot of us don't really know Robert's Rules of Order. And if we were to have a chair, we would benefit from some sort of in service or something, sure, like that, on how to do it. Like, when can you make a motion and when can you vote and that sort of stuff. So that's just one thought. But what would be the grounds for not approving somebody? Do we know?
And I'm not on Academic Senate, but I have no idea. I think usually those go as consent agenda items. Mm. Does anyone want to speak to that? That's on Senate. Does anyone know? I think, Lori, I think it's a, but I don't want to say it's pro forma, because then you kind of get into the, why do we do it? So yeah. I don't know. I guess my short answer is I don't know what the grounds would be, but I'm assuming it would be something serious. But I don't know what it would be.
Okay.
And on Robert's Rules of Order, I actually found a primer So yeah, I do think to speak to what you're speaking to, I think like an order, the first meeting order of business would be select a chair, review the collective bargaining agreement, so we're aware of like, you know, what's in there and all that, and then do a primer on Robert's Rules of Order so people are aware of that. But what I can do is I can take what I found and I can scan, I'll email it out to everyone so we have it for the next meeting so people can look at it. It's not a complete Robert's Rules of Order, but it's like a primer thing that's there. It was interesting, you know, I have it right here. What are Robert's Rules of Order? The first edition of the book was published in February 1876 by U.S. Major Henry Martin Robert. Its procedures were loosely modeled after those in the United States House of Representatives. Robert wrote Robert's Rules of Order after presiding over a church meeting and discovering that delegates from different areas of the country did not agree on proper procedure. It's in its 10th edition. So I'll scan and email this out, and that way everyone can have it. But the Academic Senate question, maybe ask your Academic Senate rep in your division. Might be the best person to try and answer that for you. Chris and then Musa.
Sorry about the noise in the background. The only question I had is just to understand in the makeup of the committee, and if it sort of felt to me like there's a focus on representing areas that are sort of outward facing and public facing, student facing, like library and bookstore and admissions and so forth. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that is a fair assessment.
Okay. And the only comment I would make on that is the one area that I think is a little more outward facing than people think and has spaces that do that isn't in there is creative arts with the theater and the gallery and public use of the theater and so forth. So just to kind of throw that out there.
Okay. I hear you. Let me look at the list. It doesn't, once you're at 30, 31 probably doesn't matter. So that's kind of the way I look at it, but it wouldn't be a big deal to add. I guess, Chris, my thing would be is, would that be a Josh? Would that be, who would you think? Or could it be anyone from the area?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I think there's a potentially an art tech kind of person who might fill that. It could be Josh, it could be, faculty. I'm not exactly sure. Could even be the division assistant, right?
Right.
Representing that world. But there's definitely both sort of the STEM aspects of some chemicals and things in there, you know, hazardous chemicals, along with the outward facing spaces.
Okay, you got it. Musa.
Yeah, I also don't have a good answer for the Academic Senate invoking somebody, but I served as a chair of one of the committees, the Academic Senate, for 3-4 years. And some of the reasons why we would ask somebody not to serve on something is their similar background, professional background. So for example, if we have two faculty who wanna be on this committee and they're both chemistry, then we'd say, can we have some variation and bring somebody from arts or from ceramics or from the library? So that would be kind of consideration. Another one is equity. So we look for, you know, creating the diversity in the committee. So these are some of the reasons that I recall that we used to, you know, suggest a replacement, not really revoking somebody. Thank you.
Thanks, Musa. Any other discussion on this? That's great. And so what I'll try and do is get out a finalized draft well in front of the, oh, go on ahead, Jessica, go on ahead.
I'm sorry, I thought you meant any more discussion on how we appoint.
No, go on ahead.
On the whole document, okay.
Okay.
I have some, I think some of us have some additional comments
sure.
on the document as a whole. I think the first one is that our summer group of a few of us who are here proposed some equity language. And I think it's not in the document. So that, the first question is, it should be, right?
Well, we were trying to align, and I think we can do it next year. But the whole goal this year was to try and align the campuses. So I'm open to including that language once we get into next year. But this year was about trying to align the three committees, given how this year we had to work almost in unison with each other. So I'm totally fine looking at it for next year. That's why it didn't make it into this one. But we can always look at it for next year.
And the impetus for us to align is from the district committee. Is that correct?
No, I wouldn't say that was necessarily from the district committee. Because I worked on that with you. So I know Eloisa brought it forward, and it was really from the VPAs since they were chairing. And like I said, that may change next year because CSM adopted and Kenyatta adopted rules that allowed the chair to be selected within the committee. So that will probably begin to change a little bit as we go forward. But that really came from the VPAs.
Oh, okay. I do have some other comments on the bylaws. I think you mentioned that you included, most of what was in the union's contract. There's a section in AFT's contract about complaints, about how our committee is responsible for hearing health and safety complaints. And I think that should be in our bylaws.
And nothing in our bylaws can supersede what's in the contract, right? We can't make exceptions. So the contract that's a commitment, right? So we can't, anything in our bylaws can't change what's in the contract.
Well, no, I'm not asking that. I'm just saying that our responsibility as a committee to hear complaints, as listed in our contracts, is not in the bylaws.
What we could do is potentially add another bullet, because the thing is that complaint language is actually in all three contracts. They mirror each other.
Good.
They're exactly the same, actually. So I think what we could do under functions is just list the contract, because those contract articles can change over time too, right? And okay, that you would just say our function is all duties and responsibilities assigned in, I believe it's Article 16 in AFT, and it's Article 13 in CSEA and ASME. And I put the CBA agreements, it's on our thing. And we would just note that's part of our function, is whatever functions are described within those union contracts. And I can add that in the functions.
Great. I have some other items to bring up, but does anyone want to comment on that before I do? Okay. We wondered if it might be appropriate to have something about how we vote within our committee, within our bylaws. So a number of people have noted that they would like for us to vote when we meet on Zoom, to vote by poll, so that our votes are not necessarily known to our supervisors, as this is a committee with almost 10 administrators. It's inevitable that some people might not be comfortable voting in a way that doesn't mirror their supervisors.
So this is me not knowing the capability of Zoom. So this is where my question's coming from. Would that mean that we'd have to run it? Because what I don't know is on polling, because we have non-committee members that come in and listen, right? They want to join. They want to find out what's going on. Can polling be done in such a way where only voting members are able to vote in a poll? I think that's my question, right? Because that part, if that's doable, then I think that's definitely doable, right? In terms of where we're at. It's just I don't know the capability of it and whether it, so what I'm saying is I don't know how to do it. That doesn't mean it can't be done, I guess, is my bottom line on that. The second part is, and just for people to think about, because my hope is that we will start meeting again face to face here at some point, right? Is, are you talking then we would have secret ballots if we were in a face-to-face venue, right? So that's where I kind of get, I understand the concern, but I think it starts taking us down that path. But I want to be supportive of it in the Zoom environment. So to me, it would be if we say it's for Zoom, and then it would just be, I don't know how to do it. So I'd really need someone, because if that's not the case, then I think it would need to be a webinar format, but I'm not even sure how that works. So I would need some technical assistance with that in terms to really know exactly how that would work.
It looks like Jim has something to say.
Yeah, Jim.
I'm not directly opposed to anything that's said, but I do think there's a desire campus-wide for a level of transparency, so people kind of know what's going on. And also, we're not, just a reminder, we're not a policy group, so we shouldn't technically be voting on controversial issues that people are concerned about. Our goal is to design, you know, policies and so far, not policies, but direction forward regarding keeping the campuses safe and, you know, managing low level issues that can be resolved rather quickly. So I don't know if we want to go down a road of, you know, secret ballots and so forth, because, you know, we're dealing with, you know, issues open to the public, and we're trying to resolve issues open to the public.
Anything else on that item? So I can, oh, and I'll let you go, Jessica. What I can do is I'll reach out to ASLT to get an idea of what the capabilities are on what's there. But go on ahead, Jessica.
Sure. I was just going to say, for AFT, when we have our open membership meetings on Zoom, we just remind people that you can't vote unless you're a committee member. And it hasn't been a problem at all. But I understand the other considerations, and I'll let Lori go ahead.
No, I think, you know, I appreciate Jim's comment on transparency. I think transparency is extremely important. The other issue, though, about controversy, there are a lot of things that are controversial to one person that aren't to someone else. And some of the issues that we deal with are sensitive or you know, challenging. So yeah, we're supposed to hear things and make recommendations. We're also supposed to, as was mentioned, hear complaints. Complaints can be controversial, or have people have skin in the game, and that's not always easy. Anyway, I just think it depends on the perspective. I don't think we are ever going to agree on what's controversial and what's not. And if something's controversial, doesn't necessarily mean it's off the table. It may be very important. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Thanks, Lori. Jessica.
Okay. thank you, everyone. I just, faculty had notified me with a few different concerns. One of the concerns was, say last summer when we had our pandemic and this committee wasn't slated to meet, that we wanted a line in our bylaws that said something to the effect that during an emergency situation that the committee has the flexibility to meet more frequently. And that's something that faculty feel, have let me know that they feel strongly about, that we were kind of crippled during a pandemic, you know, not being tasked to meet during some of the worst of it.
So when you say the flexibility, are you talking outside of like the rate, like we meet, I think I put in there like the first Thursday, what we're doing right now. Are you talking in addition to those meetings during the semester, Or are you, because I think those are things we can vote on, or are you talking about outside the regular semester, winter break, summers, just so that I'm clear on what the ask is?
My ask is both to be the language that would allow us to vote, to decide to meet more frequently, whether it be summer, or maybe we have like a really big issue that to deal with that can't be just managed in a 1 hour meeting once a month. So the flexibility to decide to meet in a special circumstances during emergency or special circumstances. And I mean, I could send some language that I think would incorporate both the ability to decide to meet in summer. Last summer we polled faculty and the majority were wanting to meet during COVID, even the full-timers who don't work in the summers. So just giving our committee the flexibility to make that decision, make those decisions.
Jim?
Just to update everybody, we already have that flexibility. The compendium discusses or lists a minimum number of meetings, not a maximum. We purposely don't have meetings in the summer unless there's a big emergency and a need to do so because people are on vacation. So a lot of the meetings would end up being kind of a waste of time because we wouldn't have all the constituents there and people would complain if any action was taken because they'd say they weren't able to participate. But there's no language whatsoever that prevents us from meeting more often. The standard is just that we have to meet a certain number of times per year, but nothing limits increasing that on a need by need basis.
I have to disagree. I just want to cite the example of last summer where at the May meeting, I asked if we could meet in summer and the current chair of the committee said no, and that was it. So I want to have something in the bylaws to give us a mechanism to exercise that flexibility. Whether some people understand it's true and some don't, I think it would serve us better to have it in writing.
Jim, hold on 1 second. I did want to point out, it wasn't me who said no.
No, so it wasn't you.
Yeah. Okay. No, I wanted to make sure of that. just to note that, Jim, if you want to now, I'm sorry for cutting you off. I apologize. No, it's
fine.
I just wanted to clarify that.
It absolutely wasn't you. And to go back over that, we actually did end up meeting over the summer. So initially there was a no, and then it was brought to a higher level and then that was reversed and we did end up meeting. So I mean, that shows that the language does in fact work. You know, just because a request is initially denied doesn't mean that it's, you know, not, you know, able to be appealed, which this was. And then we did meet over summer. So, you know, it's basically already working is what I'm pointing out.
I just have one more response and that it was brought to a higher level by me at the risk of my job as an adjunct. And that was not ideal. So I'll stop there.
Okay. Other items, Jessica?
Sure. So people were wondering, and I think this has been accomplished. About a year ago, we wouldn't see the audio recordings until sort of right before the meeting, the audio recordings of our meetings. To have those, if it might be possible to codify in our bylaws when the audio recordings would be available when meetings are held by Zoom, say like within 2 weeks of the meeting or something like that. That was a suggestion that certain people made. And certainly Paul has posted recordings much quicker than they previously were. But, you know, if Paul isn't continuing to serve in that role at some point. We faculty have asked for language that would ensure that the audio recordings are available sooner, because the work that we do is so timely, and if people can't attend these meetings, they're sometimes left waiting for weeks to find out what happened.
And what I'd say on that, we try and get it. I'd rather not codify it in the bylaw, and let me explain why. I work with Paul, and we do it as quickly as we can, right? But there can be situations where we would have to delay, not do it as quickly for whatever reason. And those are workload things that occur within this office. I'd want to feel comfortable knowing that if it was there, that we could do it, and that whoever is the chair could abide by it, right? Once we get to that, because there's only what you can control and can't control. And again, this is my thing, is at some point we're not doing Zoom anymore. Then it gets to back to the minutes, right? The audio is kind of nice, because then if you weren't at the meeting, you can just listen, right? Mm-hmm. But if we don't have it by Zoom and we're face-to-face, then you are going to have to wait until the minutes are ready. And Paul takes a lot of time on those, right? In terms of where it's at. So that's my hesitation on establishing a set time. We'll get them out as soon as we can. I'd feel comfortable with that standard, right? And that we all recognize that, in the same way all of you are strapped and busy with what you're doing, we get that way too. We'll try and get it out as fast as we can. That hopefully will be within the 2 weeks that you're looking for. But if we don't, I wouldn't want someone to say, hey, you're not following what's in there, you promise, you know, and stuff like that. I think on that, I'd ask for people's forbearance, and to say, like, I understand that you're doing the best you can, and if it's not there in 2 weeks, email us, I can give you an update, as opposed to codifying it, would kind of be where I'm at on that. Jim.
Just from a participation and accessibility standpoint, I think we should always, regardless of what happens in the future, we should always maintain a Zoom component to the meetings. It allows people who have busy schedules and are committed to other things to still participate and hear what's going on. So that might be something to consider.
Okay. Understood.
That sounds good. I think, was Jim, what you were saying is to run a hybrid meeting essentially going forward?
Absolutely. If you look at most governments, a lot of city council meetings, county supervisor meetings and so forth, they've all adopted, or I shouldn't say all, but most have adopted a permanent procedure of maintaining Zoom, just because of the accessibility, especially handicapped people, disabled people, people who are sick, you know, issues like that, they can still participate and have their voices heard and hear other people's voices. So, you know, students have difficulty getting to campus sometime, transportation, you look at gas prices nowadays. I think being able to reach as many people as we can is us doing the right thing.
Great. I think I just have one more. Sorry for the delay here. I liked that we added reporting to CGC. That seems to be in line with the other committees. A question I had was about our membership. I think we have three representatives from the president's office who are classified. And I know you're here. And so I saw that wasn't the case at the other two committees. And I wonder, I guess it's Teresa and Sherry and one other person. And I wondered how it came to be that we have three reps from that.
Well, and I think that's why I did it in the ex officio role. I think, without knowing, and I've been on the committee a long time, I've been on the committee the entire time that I've been here. I think the goal was to have an ex officio member as ex officio members, the president and vice president of instruction and vice president of student services. And the recognition that with schedules, it could be challenging for them to be here, right? And so I think what happened was then Sherry, Golda, and Teresa are that support for that office, right? And that they're here to let those people know, hey, this is what happened at Health and Safety. Because you got to remember, the vice president of administrative services wasn't always here. The dean of admissions and records ran this committee at one time. That's who the person was. So in essence, they're a method for communication to go back and let the VPs and the presidents know, hey, this came up at Health and Safety. You know, did it? This is important. You may want to follow up, you know, and do this. So in essence, that's why I changed it on the membership. So it's ex officio. And it's the president, the two vice presidents and the president, which have always been on there, but now it would be them or their designee. In terms of how it would work. So then if Sherry, Golda, and Teresa can make it, great. They're here, perfect. But it wouldn't be, you know, Melissa, Nguyen, and Danny, and Teresa, you know, Golda, and whatever. It would be one or the other. And they serve in that ex officio role.
Okay, and then just one last question was, I think we don't have a HR person on the committee, is that right? Right,
yeah, we don't. And there's no way that I could guarantee that we would have someone here, like to be here and to serve on the committee on a regular basis. That's why I didn't have it on there. CSM doesn't have it. Kenyatta put it on there, but I don't know who they get to show up for it. And my whole thing is, if there are HR things that are related, that's something that we can carry out of the meeting back to HR, as opposed to asking someone to come to a committee meeting. And I think we've done a better job at getting through the agenda and everything, right? And making everything go. Asking someone from that office to commit to an hour and 15 minutes every month, where there may be no HR issue, like today, mm-hmm. except this item, there are no HR issues, and they would just be there, right? To sit there, it would be a non-voting resource if they were. So I kind of looked at that like maybe at some point, but was it essential? I didn't think it was. To try and do that. And like I said, I don't know that they could send us someone that could answer the questions necessarily or guarantee that for us all the time.
I guess I was thinking that toward the beginning of the pandemic, we had a lot of questions about health policies for leave, and we didn't have anyone to answer those questions. And sometimes the answer was, that's an HR issue, not a safety committee issue. And so I thought, at least even if we had someone as from classified who could be a communicator, someone coming to be a communications liaison, that I think it would be really useful. And I think that's what Kenyatta decided as well. So I just wondered if maybe we could hear from others about that.
Anyone? Lori.
I just wanted to agree with Jessica. Listening to some of Dr. Moreno's presentations as well, a lot of it has been dominated by HR questions and loads of confusion. And if we had somebody on our committee, maybe it wouldn't be every meeting we would need a response, but it would be really nice to have some in-house expertise and an inside view, because some of the other meetings were really, you know, didn't have time to answer all the HR questions.
And what I'm thinking is it might be, again, a non-voting resource. And what I might put there is like an asterisk and say as needed, where where we could see things are coming up. So there's the spur of the moment thing where we wouldn't be able to address it maybe at the moment, but if it came up in the meeting, then we would bring it and we would ask HR to come in and then address it at that point, as opposed to having someone at every, because like I said, I can't guarantee that we're going to have that. And just leave it there as an as needed, because I recognize that. I know I saw that, you know, as we started off. And I mean, that's why Dr. Moreno went with her, with the, because it was impossible for us to do our business even, because there were so many questions. Go on ahead, Lori.
No, I was just going to say, you know, so I, with Jessica, represent the AFT, but classified had a different process in place, it seemed, about reporting infections. We weren't all operating in the right. same way. Maybe that was part of the problem, or it's just simply if you had an inside HR wisdom,
right.
it could have guided us a little bit better in a shorter amount of time, you know?
No, yeah. I recognize, yeah, I'm trying to wait. So I'm not disagreeing with, it would be wonderful if people had all the time in the world to have the person in here. I can't guarantee it, right? And that's why I said, having it on an as needed basis, I think is what we're looking for, right? Because I understand that that could be there. And it's just trying to put it in that way. So it's not every single meeting. Yes, Jessica.
The last point I just wanted to bring up was that we have some division reps among our faculty who don't come to these meetings. And I don't know if it's appropriate for the bylaws, but I think we need to come up with a process, because two or three of our reps almost never come. And Musa's brought it up before, Masao's brought it up before. And we really need the representation from those divisions. I know in the Senate, there's rules if you don't attend three times, et cetera, et cetera. And I wanted to hear folks' thoughts on that.
I have thoughts.
Yeah, who said that?
Lucia.
Lucia, go on ahead.
So I would, you know, I know that's probably beyond the scope of this, but just not being here, but being, the camera's off, but being physically present, but also like mentally present. And I find it very frustrating to have people, you know, like they've got they're here, but they're not here. So I think like not just being here, but actually bringing information back to their divisions so that there's not this like, oh, we don't know what's happening. It's because you didn't come to the meeting and you didn't bring it back to your division. So of course they're not going to know what's going on. So I think, you know, part of that's on us too, and to make sure that we have people actually being present. You know, I don't want my face on the whole time because it's being recorded, but I'm here and I'm present and I'm engaged.
Thank you, Lucia. So I mean, and it's really up to folks on, so this would be my one concern about, because it's an accountability measure. And I know committee service, is a faculty responsibility, that us doing that can have ramifications, right? For that faculty member in terms of their, what they are responsible for, right? And then for classified, I'm not quite sure, you know, how that would work. So I agree with what everyone said. It would seem extreme to kick someone off the committee is kind of my perspective on it. And that, you know, it may be that we would need some sort of outreach mechanism. Maybe they need to change with someone. There could be something going on with them that they're not able to fully participate. I just would be uncomfortable saying someone is off the committee. That's my perspective on it, and I wanted to share that. Jessica and then Musa, and I want to point out we're 204. It's been a great conversation. I do, but we need to wrap it up after these two comments. Okay, go on ahead.
I'm going to cede my time to Musa.
Okay.
Actually, I just have something little, but you know, in the first meeting of the divisions, I think the deans can have a great impact on that. If they announce that, you know, if you want to be included in that committee, you have to commit. And the emphasis maybe should start there. And if they bring up the reporting from the committee to the division meeting every month, if there is something new, puts the faculty or the classified staff under the obligation of being here and getting engaged and reporting back to their division. Something along what Lucia just said. So, you know, I remember in previous division meetings, the dean was saying, you shouldn't be on that committee. No, everybody knows that you've never been there. Actually, they announced that in the division meeting. And but nothing much was done about it. I also still agree with Joe that, you know, kicking somebody out is a bit harsh and it's not nice somehow. And, you know, but maybe after two times of missing, we can, you know, communicate with that person and see if they want to stay or get a replacement from their division and, you know, some talk about it. But having it as a bylaw, kicked out, you know, if you miss three, I think that's, we're going too far with that. That's my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Musa. Well, I appreciate everyone, the feedback. So my goal is going to be to get a draft done as quickly as I can to get it out to everyone for more feedback and work off of what was said today. And my goal is that we'll get a final version to our main meeting so we can vote on that. So this is sunshining it, right? That's our process, sunshining it. I'll amend, and then we will bring it back to that main meeting. Yeah, Musa, go on ahead.
Just one last thing about the point that Jessica brought and Jim responded to about the monthly meeting. Actually, function number four, because we're gonna vote on that next time, it says conduct monthly campus safety meetings for students, faculty, classified professionals. I don't know what that language means, like a minimum of once a month, or we're gonna commit to just one time a month. Or maybe we can, you know, add something, some language, you know, or more if needed. Something like can be modified before we vote on it.
That's a good suggestion. So I'll look at function number four then and try and get that in where it like that a minimum of, but it depending on circumstances can be more than, right? Something like that.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. All right, everyone. Agenda item six, the exercise program. Just really quickly on this, Marco, Lucia, and I met. We had a very good discussion. We're going to try and come up with something. You know, it's trying to find resources where maybe we can do something with the CTTL to have like an exercise or fitness type activity on a consistent basis throughout the semesters. Fall and spring that faculty and staff can participate in without necessarily being signed up for a class. That being said, you know where I come from. We have great exercise classes that are offered at this school for credit. If you've already taken it, you can audit it. So look at our schedule in the summer and in the fall. I know there'll be lots of wonderful offerings out there. And this is what I tell people, your best defense against COVID is offense. And one of the primary things that you can do is try and exercise 30 minutes a day, even if it's just walking, getting out there, doing what you need to do, taking good care of yourself is your best defense against, in addition to the vaccine, it is one of the best defenses to COVID. And yes, we have, I did read that. I saw the awesome fitness instructors. Thank you. Thank you, Lucia. Okay, everyone, that brings us to the end of our agenda. Again, I want to thank everyone for your time and attention, and I am ending this meeting and we'll look forward to seeing all of you on May 5th. Take care, everyone. Have a good day.